Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Welcome to DIY for Business. It's Russ and Greg with you. Greg, how's it going?
It's busy, man. How are you doing?
it's very busy, isn't it? Like, I was talking to somebody the other day, and I was like, this is one thing I miss about like that as I've called it before, the pandemic pause, right? Of just like sitting there in 2020. Really nothing to do. You're not going to go anywhere. You're not going to, you know, you don't have to look good. You don't have to shower. You don't have to get out of sweats. You just do your thing. You sit in front of your computer, you work, and then you hang out. I mean, I'm sort of missing that a little bit because, man, I'm busy.
Not easy. And you're saying, you know, sometimes back in the pandemic, to pause, like you didn't have to shower, stuff like that. Now I feel like I'm a celebrity because I have to look good on all my Zoom meetings, all of my podcasts. You know, right. I have to look better now that I don't see anybody in person because I'm on camera all day.
Right, right. Well, you still don't have to wear pants, but, you know, that's all
right. Well, hey. Don't tell my secrets. You know, people are listening.
Exactly.
I want to keep my business going. I don't want people to be afraid of like, what's going on behind that camera shutter.
Talking about this, right? The more that you grow, the more that you scale your business, the more that it's taking up your time, right? Like the more, like I remember, you know, when I first started my business, I was like, oh, sweet. Like I can get everything done in a couple hours a day. And then I was like, well, you know, if I do a couple more hours, I'm going to make more money. And then if I do a couple more, and then all of a sudden, you know, 12 hours a day, 5 days a week and 8 hours a day on the weekend, all of a sudden you're like, oh, all right, well, I'm making a lot of money. I can't use it because I don't have time, but everything's going well there. So that's, you know, it's a dream, but it's also like, hey, do we want to get there? And how do we get there successfully without stressing ourselves out to the point of a, you know, like a breaking point or the point of we just like want to sell it and get rid of it and go get a day job.
Well, and I think it also depends on like what stage of your company you're at, right? If you're at the beginning stage of your company, you are just like overwhelmed with different new responsibilities and just different things coming your way. Whereas if you have an established business where you kind of have all the pieces in place, you have your managerial team there, your processes, it's a lot easier. So, you know, for me, as you know, I'm kind of at both stages, right? I got a couple of different companies going. I'm one that's pretty established. Great. I got one that's kind of newer and getting off the ground right now. And that's taking up a lot of time. It's a balance, but, you know, it really depends on how much assistance you need in scaling, depending on where you are in the evolution of your company.
This is something where, you know, hey, maybe you want to sell, maybe you want to reach out, like whatever your goals are. Growth is always going to be a goal, right? Scaling your business is always pretty much going to be a goal, unless I guess you're trying to get out.
Yeah.
But even with that, you know, you want to raise the price point of it. So that is our conversation today. We're talking about growing and scaling a business. We've got Brandon Davis from Trek One Capital out there in Houston with a beautiful background. I wish we were on a video so that you can see this. It's fantastic. Brandon, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. And just to let everyone know right up front, I don't have pants on. So just
perfect.
Pull it up.
Perfect. Yeah. All right. Well,
get that out of the way. No one has to wonder.
That makes three of us.
I think we need to change the name of the show.
It was a shorts day. It was a shorts day today at the office. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. Well, it's like we're in that midst of the beautiful weather here. I'm in Northern California, and it's like we've had this weather shift where, you know, we got the wind, we got the pollen out. So if I'm sneezing during this, I do apologize, but that'll be my thing for this one. So tell us a little about yourself, Brandon, before we jump into things, just to let everybody get to know you a bit.
Okay. Well, I live in Houston, Texas. I grew up in Oklahoma. My first big step into business was oil and gas exploration and development, and then we started raising capital and drilling wells. And over roughly 20 years, formed and funded over 112, 113 entities, did 10 or 12 M&A transactions, and, you know, went through the full cycle of work 7 days a week, grow, have absolutely no time to do anything fun. And you actually forget, you know, how like to do that. Right. And then burn out, and then just quit worrying about it at all. And then, you know, like you have these phases as entrepreneurs, that we all go through, and finding a balance, like Greg was talking about, is so hard. It is so, so hard.
Where do you find your release? Like where, how do you get, you know, you find your sanity?
Well, I have two amazing young sons, and that is a lot of my distraction. And they have a lot of things that need to be done on a regular basis and activities to show up at, things I can't miss, you know? So I schedule around them, and then I work out every day in some form or fashion. And that is the only way I stay where mentally sharp. I can't be mentally sharp if I'm not physically sharp. I've learned that the hard way too. I mean, back when I was 10 years ago, when I was flying around on a private plane every day and eating horribly and never taking a minute off, I was almost 100 pounds heavier than I am right now. So, and unhealthy, and, you know, always hurting, and I felt older than I do now. So yeah. Exercise is definitely the key for me.
I feel like that's, you know, exercise and rest. I mean, it's like, it seems like, you know, oh, I've got these big deadlines, I got these clients to do, but you know what? I'm going to go run on the treadmill for half an hour, or I'm going to take a nap, or, you know, I'm going to eat a, you know, better than just a, you know, hamburger or quick bite off, you know, TV dinner, whatever, you know, like, you don't think about that stuff a lot of the times when you're in the midst of it, you know, but all that stuff does matter. I mean, it's feeding your brain, it's feeding your body. And if your body and brain aren't there, your business isn't going to be there.
Absolutely not. And I can tell you that, you know, I spend more time on myself and my mental health and physical health than I do anything else. I mean, that's like it's made it my priority. Because if I don't make something a priority, I don't do it. You know, it's just literally like, you know, having businesses. And, you know, I also try really hard not to ever have duties in my companies. So if I own a company, I'm an investor, not an employee. If I have it my way, and that obviously you have to find the right people to help you to get to that point. But when we're acquiring businesses or talking about scaling businesses, I mean, the biggest thing is freeing up the person that created everything's time so they can keep creating and keep growing the business. Or if they get to a point where they can't, they at least know that they're at a point they can't, and they need to find somebody to help them get to the next level.
Yeah. So when you're looking at different businesses to invest in, like, what are you looking for? How do you vet them? What's the process for you?
Well, I have a team of people that do it for me. For me, they provide me with the data on the company, its current state. And what my team brings me is they show me their plan to go forward with it and build it. And then I give my input at that point. And they usually go back to work and come back with another version of that plan after my input's involved, because, you know, it's at the end of the day, they're going to be doing 90% of the work. And I'm going to be 90% of the vision. And so that's usually how it works out for me. I have had jobs in my businesses and had to be there every day, all day, and got down in that grind, and you know, you just get stuck, and then you have to depend on other people to think for you and your business, and that just doesn't work well. So you know, having the right team is crucial.
So yeah, it totally. And keeping the right team too, right? And sort of like the stuff that you were talking about, you know, about that whole balance thing, like keeping them happy as well, keeping them happy and healthy if you can, you know, like that's always, well,
I had the company that I was talking about before that we spoke of just a little bit, like that did the exploration, formed a company about every 30 days for 15 years. Mm-hmm. I basically gave it away because it was a $20, $25 million a year company that just clicked along. It didn't really take a lot of time or a lot of energy, but it didn't make me happy. And so about 10 years ago, I found myself with my company. We managed 125 entities, which was a nightmare, and expensive, and just a lot of work. And what I realized is that it was not a happy thing for me. And so over from that point till last year, I have gone from 125 entities, and now I'm down to about, I want to say 8 right now, that we are still operating and managing here. I own 100% of most of those. And then we're starting to bring in capital and do larger deals. So, but yeah, I literally cut everything out of my life that didn't make me happy. If it didn't make me happy, it's gone. And I didn't care what I lost in the process. And I lost millions of dollars doing it, but I didn't care. And it wasn't like I had this giant pile of cash sitting around. It was just that I knew if I wasn't happy, I'm not going to make money. So whatever I'm doing isn't going to be successful because I'm not happy. So I had to get rid of everything that was making me unhappy and then make myself healthy. And now here we go. So that's been my last 6 years. It's been interesting. Learned a lot about myself.
What was the breaking point for you that helped you like realize that all of that was unsustainable?
Yeah, when I was younger, when I built all that, I mean, I built a company. We went from 5 million to 25 million in 2 years, and then to 55, and so on and so forth. The biggest that ever got an annual growth rate from sales was right at 50 million. And that was kind of plateaued, sort of buying companies at that point. But I was happy and loved every day. I enjoyed it. And what I realized is after about, it was like 24 straight months of just bad luck. And I was just negative. And I had no idea that it was so bad, but I had people that worked for me a long, long time, like 12 years, eight to 12, two different people that resigned. And I'm like, what's going on? Why are you guys leaving? And they're just like, this isn't fun anymore. You know? And I started thinking about it. I'm like, you're right. This sucks. Like this really does suck. And so let's do something about it. So they actually ended up coming back and we did it. And here we are today and everybody's happier, lighter. And my net worth has increased. So it's not been a bad thing overall, but it definitely was a big pivot.
Right. That's the ultimate win-win, right? Is that you reduce the stress and you made more money at the same time. I mean, that's what it's all about if we can pull it off.
It blows my mind to every time I get, the happier I get, the more money I make, and it doesn't really matter what I'm doing, you know?
Is that part of the philosophy that you bring into the companies that you decide to invest in?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it's a culture, right? So you have to have the right culture to build a company. Attitudes have to be all focused in the same direction. Everybody's got to be on the same team. And it's really, unfortunately, that's not usual. Usually very siloed and separated, which is what people like to do because they're comfortable in that. And it really, really restricts your business. A year ago, I fired a management team of one of my companies because they were doing a very poor job. And so I replaced $500,000 a year in salaries with a 5-minute phone call 5 days a week for me. It's a Zoom. And that was me replacing those two people, three people, actually, three executives that are no longer with the company. And the margins have gone up about 100% this year from last year so far. So it's working, and it's all attitude. It's all the mindset and having the right thought process, you know. Think of what we can do to make it better every time you walk by it. You know, like that is unfortunately not commonplace these days in humans. You know, you walk by something that's broken. You know, most people just keep walking. I can't stand that. I stop and see if I can repair it. If I can't, then I'll find someone else to do it. But I'm definitely not going to just walk by something that's broken every day. You know, it drives me nuts. And so that just teaching people like, hey, if you see something that's not right, solve the problem or find someone else that can. Don't ignore it and act like it's not there. And that's the first step, right? That's a big one, though. It's not an easy one. That is probably one of the most challenging parts of this. And it's the same whether it's a blue collar worker or a person in the office. It's all the same. You know, it just we get used to ignoring things and it just gets ignored.
Right. Or and I always hate this, and I think almost everybody does. Why do you do that? Well, because we always have.
No, I don't like, care. Yeah. It's like, what?
Does it work?
If that's the answer I get, I'm like, then stop doing it. You see what happens.
Exactly. Stop doing it.
And I find that a lot of people just love pointing out the problems, but they don't want to come with a solution. They love like, that's wrong. That's wrong. That's wrong. But they, you know, like, okay, well, what are you going to do about it? Where are the solutions to those problems instead of just being, you know, the negative one and just pointing them out? Hate that.
I know this is going to be like super situational, but I want to dig into when you fired the entire management team. What were the red flags? And you know, as much as you can say on a podcast, of course, you know, other people are listening. I'll remind you, it's not just the three of us. But what were the red flags? And how did you, like, what makes your Zoom calls, your 5-minute Zoom calls, work so well that you can actually replace, you know, $500,000 in salary?
So I noticed that things were not being done that were being said to be done. Like we were being told information that was bad. These are remote facilities that are all over the place. So I went and visited one, and it was not what it was supposed to be at all. And we had acquired this, and our whole plan was to clean it up, make it more efficient, and, you know, obviously improve margins and make more money. Well, we did that. We doubled the profit initially. So I didn't pay a lot of attention right out of the gate because they literally like immediately doubled the EBITDA. I'm like, okay, well, we're good. Then as the year went on, I started paying more and more attention, got dug into the details. And then I started really getting into the details because I had sold that other company, gotten rid of it, that was taking all my time so I could really focus on it. And I found holes in everything. And what really got me is I went and started having conversations with the operations managers at the facilities to find out how much information they didn't have and what they knew and didn't know. And they were clueless. Mm-hmm. And if you went from one facility to the next, completely different attitudes, completely different, you know, priorities. The priorities were wrong in all the places. And that was the thing. Whenever I realized that, I'm just like, this is wasting my time. So I got rid of those guys. My calls initially were once a week because that's what they were doing before. And I was just horrible. It was horrible because every week there was all these problems and we're dealing with these things. And then it was like a week before I talked to these. I still talked to them in between, but it was like, all right, we need to start doing this every month or every day. And then I built a P&L for each facility. So the guys that are running the facility can tell if the work they're doing and how well they're managing their labor and their cost, how it's doing is making the facility money or losing money. And that really pulled everybody together because they could see, you know, everyone that, especially in blue collar businesses, this is an environmental solutions business. So there's a lot of people working on the ground and they work hard. But they had no idea other than the check they got what happened with the business financially. They didn't know what mattered or what didn't matter. And so now they see when something goes wrong, they see what happens and they can see it on the finance. And it's just like, oh, wow. Oh, this is scary. I'm like, yeah. Yeah, we made money last month and the month before, but we just lost it all this week, right? they can see it. And they're like, oh, wow, that makes it. But it puts everybody on the same page. So those are the two things I did. I initially started, I did most of the talking and was pointing out things. And I would go to the facilities and point out things. And now I get on the calls and I mostly just listen. They're communicating and talking about the things that are working, things that aren't working. Here's what we tried. Try this. And working together as a team instead of a bunch of people that are, you know, having to do a Zoom call every week that don't really want to do it in the first place.
Yeah, it sounded like you just created a very collaborative environment, whereas before, like you said, it was just so siloed off. Nobody had any idea what was going on within the organization. And I find that sometimes different locations will find that competitive where they want to one up everybody, what, you know, at the other locations and that type of thing. And then if the environment is set right, the culture is set right, it becomes like what you're saying, super collaborative, where everybody's trying to help each other. And that's
But they're still competing.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So it's, yeah, it's like a win-win.
Well, and that's the other thing too. Like, you know, the whole just you bringing in the P&L showing like what is actually happening. They're playing to the numbers. They're competing against themselves. They're competing against maybe the other locations. Like
month to month.
That creates a win, right?
It's huge.
Just having access to that data and being able to, you know, visualize it and show it.
My team, my accounting team thought I was crazy when I did it. I was like, no, this is gonna be, it's gonna work, and it did. And they're excited to see, like, can as I have it where it projects out what the month's gonna look like. So every day we're kind of tracking, and they're, you know, it's fun. So that's, it was all communication at the end of the day, though. I don't, you know, there was just there was no leadership from the leaders, and that was the problem. Which isn't unusual, as you guys know.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. It happens for sure. And it's like, it's one of those things that, you know, I mean, if we're talking to somebody that's an entrepreneur and they're in that position, it's like, I guess, I don't know. How do you avoid slipping into that? How do you do some sort of self-evaluation so that you know that you're being a good leader? Are you just looking at numbers to do that? Like the numbers improve, so you're better, or the people stay and you're better. Like, what are you doing? How are you judging yourself?
That is a good question. And I try not to, I kind of treat it as if I am the greeter, trash man. You know, I try to be in it as much as I can.
Yeah.
And get real feedback from the people at all the levels. And just that's what feeds me. Obviously the numbers are important, and finding things to do that keep the company running more productive, more efficiently is always important, and the P&L is the place you find those things usually. But for me, it's being involved in the day to day. And when there's a problem that, you know, that's beyond their solving, they immediately call and like, hey, what are we doing here? Instead of trying to solve it for a week to have all this pride, and like, I'm one of them. And I think that when you, even though I don't have a job in that company and they know it, when I show up, I'm doing something, you know, and it's usually something that the person at the facility that makes the least amount of money does is usually what I show up and do. Just because I can't stand around. So, but they respect that. And I think that helps the communication to continue to come through. And I just feed off of the feedback they give me. And, and it's really hard to judge yourself without some feedback from somebody. I mean, that's the hardest part of being a sole proprietor and having your own business and nobody. I mean, that's why people join masterminds. And I fly around all over the country doing that every month. Meeting with different groups about different things, and it's all to try to make myself better. That's what I do. It's the only way I found to do it.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I'm just curious with Trek Capital, are you only getting involved in projects where they're looking for some managerial support or advice, or are you sometimes getting in as like, hey, this is a great opportunity. They already kind of have the structure. They just need some capital, and you know, this seems like a good venture to just invest in. What do you look for? How do you evaluate that?
So when we're looking, we want to close and have value immediately. So you know, a lot of groups have very specific parameters. We don't. We're agnostic as far as industry goes. Mm-hmm. We are. You know, as far as revenues, we like EBITDA to be somewhere like around $1 million up to 10 is kind of our sweet spot. And preferably an operator is bringing us the deal. And that's how we connect. And maybe they need capital, or maybe they just need some financial, strategic financial help with debt structure and SOPs and just basic things. I mean, that's usually when we're looking at these companies, we know what we're going to make on them the day we close at a minimum. Like, we know the bottom, the floor. And then it's, you know, from that point, it's what else can you do to make it more valuable? So we are very loose with that as far as what we look for. But the biggest thing is we have to see the value before we close. I mean, it's not just, we don't want to buy a business just because it's a great industry to be in and I want to be in it for the next 10 years. We're buying a business or investing in a business that we want to be in and out of in under 5 years, and 3 is the target. And if okay. if we have to be stuck in there longer than that, then there better be a good reason. You know, right now we're doing, so one of the companies that I own is Alter Eco Foods, which is a chocolate brand that's in Whole Foods, Sprouts, Natural Grocers. It's in Walmart in Canada, Loblaws. It's all over the country, and Canada and Australia. But we're getting ready to do a roll up in that space, because there isn't anyone else doing it. And it's a great space. The better for you space is huge. That multiple grows up as you grow in size, right? So they have a multiple of EBITDA that you buy these companies for at $1 million in EBITDA. And they have a different multiple if you get to $20 million in EBITDA. And there's arbitrage all the way up as far as what we're looking for. So that's our day one upside, right? We know what that arbitrage is going to be when we put these companies together. And then the next piece is how much can we grow them in the interim? And so our target is 25 to 30% a year. And if we hit those markers, then we're out in 3 years and everybody's happy. So that's one angle. And then, and that company was a turnaround. Hmm.
They're struggling for before you got involved.
They were struggling, but not for any other reason than bad decisions. It was almost $30 million a year business. And it was just struggling. People that owned it were very smart. They just didn't have great management in the company, I guess, at the end of the day. It didn't work. So that's one thing that we, as a smaller private equity firm / family office, which is basically what we have here, ultimately, we have flexibility and we're all operators. So usually these very wealthy family offices and PE firms have lots and lots of money and very, very sophisticated, very intelligent people, but no one on their internal team that has operated a business. And in my case, between me and the two people in the offices next to me, we have been in like 15 different industries, and done turnarounds in all of them.
Nice.
So it just makes it real. When we see a deal, it's like, we all three look at it differently from different angles and have the same out, like, okay, this is where we're going to end up. And that's when we know we have the right deal.
When you're picking a business, aside from, you know, just how much you're going to make, like, are there other, like, are you looking at like just specific markets? Or are you like, is there anything in there other than just, you're just looking at the bottom line? Figure out what you're
looking at the bottom line and the upside. Right. So, you know, and it doesn't matter what the industry is. I mean, we're looking at a funeral home business right now.
What are some common traits? Like, what are the things that make it like an obvious yes? Like,
funeral homes is not upside, that's downside.
Yeah, that sounds good.
But there's lots of upside.
Yeah.
Anyway, honestly, at the end of the day, what I'm looking for is the right person and the right opportunity. And if the person that's bringing the opportunity has a plan that we can get behind, and it makes economic sense, then that's something we want to do. You know, it's that simple. And it really, a lot of it, and I know that I'm being vague, but like a lot of it's just how I feel about it at the end of the day. Like, I mean, that's a big part of it.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, it's my decision. So, So I have that going for me. But I trust myself very well. And I'm, you know, we all make good decisions and bad decisions, but, yeah. But Lee, like for me, if we've had some really good opportunities that turned out to have managers bringing the operator that wanted to do the deal was just not, didn't work with us, you know, and for one reason or another, it's happened several times. The opportunities we were like, we really want to do this, but I hate this guy and we can't do it. Yeah. So right. We don't do it. I mean, to me, it's got to have the whole package. You know, I just won't touch it.
That's what I was trying to get to, because I felt like a lot of what the decisions that you're making, yeah, it's the bottom line. It's how much you're going to make. It's how much you're going to be able to grow it. What, you know, but it's also, there is a bit of gut decision there. It's like, it's just what feels right. What point did in your career, did you feel like you started to trust your gut, and what made you want to trust your gut?
That is a good question, and it's scary to answer that question. I trusted my gut. I actually just had this conversation an hour ago, and I'm not telling you with who, but I trusted my gut, and then some stuff went wrong, and I got angry and kept trusting my gut, and then I had to stop because it wasn't accurate for a while. Right. I mean, yeah, it was like a 9-figure dive, and deal after deal after deal too. It was insane. Yeah. But I basically, for me to retrust myself, I had to be happy, had to feel good, and kind of get back to myself. And if I'm happy and I'm healthy and clear headed, and I'm not stuck doing a job in a company, I trust myself 100%. And that, realizing that it takes all of that though to do it. Yeah. That took like 40 years.
Totally. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. It took 40 years.
Yeah.
But because it used to be like hesitate and trust myself and didn't trust myself. And then I forced things. And, you know, like when everything you touch for 7 years is gold, like you just keep touching things. And then when it starts going from gold to chart to coal, like, I mean, mm-hmm. not the kind you can sell, like the lumps that go to the bottom of the ocean kind of coal. You start doubting yourself and you're like, okay, yeah. What am I doing? And so like, I did a lot of self-reflecting and self-evaluation, and I mean, I spent years on it, and that is kind of what got me to where I'm at now. And when I make a decision now, I don't make them as fast as I used to, but they don't change.
Yeah. I think that self-doubt that creeps in really clouds decision-making. You know, I kind of equate it to a poker player. Like when people are playing poker, like you're saying, and they're, you know, on a good rush and the cards are kind of coming their way, they're feeling, oh my gosh, my decision making is so good. And all of a sudden they have like 10 bad sessions in a row. They lose, you know, thousands of dollars. And then they go, oh my gosh, should I call this one? Should I raise? I don't know what to do. And that doubt, that indecision, and people sense it on you. They smell it on you. Yeah, they see totally. It on you.
Yeah.
And
then
all of a sudden it spirals and it just gets out of control at times. So you taking that step back and kind of doing that reflection, working on yourself, it kind of cleared your mind so you can make those good decisions again that you were doing, you know, when you were on that, you know, that good role.
And, you know, you're right, Greg, people totally sense it, right?
Yeah.
Like
you smell
and
it.
Your clients are going to sense it. Like everybody is going to feel it.
Everybody.
And they're just not going to, like, if you don't trust yourself, others aren't going to trust you. Uh-uh. Right. Like it's just, you gotta get to that point at some point. It's just, it's hard. It is not a, an easy journey to get
there.
Well,
it's tough to continue to be confident when things are going bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
That's when you have to step back. I mean, you have to take a step back and look and like, all right, what is going on right now? And why did this happen and that happen? Right. I mean, and those are usually hard conversations with yourself too. Right. Yeah. I mean, that's not a fun one. I mean, that's sort picking of like, yourself apart.
Yeah. I mean, it's sort of like, you know, like what baseball, you get the yips, right. And you can't hit the ball. You can't hit the ball. You know, you can hit the ball, but then once you get past it and you start doing it, then you start, you know, hitting the home runs again.
Well, I feel blessed to have lived through what I did when I was younger and how I worked and all the things that I did accomplish, because I learned so much in that fury. Learned a lot more when things went sideways and negative. But having all of that experience and being in the right circles and doing, you know, it just, again, just knowing the right people, like the things that are happening now for me are literally like, I don't feel like I do any work, you know, it's just,
yeah, right.
And my wealth is going north exponentially right now. And it's fun and it doesn't cause me to lose time with my kids. And so I have a life. I didn't have that before and I didn't care about that. But having, you know, it's amazing how easy it is to make money when your head's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
totally. I mean, it sounds to somebody listening out there might say, you know, hey, I gave up $1 million, $10 million or whatever, because I wasn't happy or it wasn't fun. What's the point in the $10 million if you're not happy and you're not fun? Like, what's the point in doing these things if you're not going to, you know, spend the time with your family, if you're not going to do the things that you want to do, if you're not going to have fun? So it's like, I don't know. I mean, I've left plenty of things because I'm just not having fun with it anymore. I'm not happy with it. And it just, you know, I move on to something else that's going to make me happy, and it's great. it's a good path to be on.
I got that. I can't take credit for this myself. It was a friend of mine that I met in Tiger 21 that had a business that he grew, and then he sold part of and stayed on, and then grew and then sold, and it was a big exit the second time. Mm-hmm. It was a conversation I had with him, and if I said the business, you would know it. But long story short, he had told me about having a partner in a business, and he basically gave him the business, and it was worth like $8 or $10 million. Yeah. And he's like, I we were talking one day. I said, what happened to this company you used to talk about? He goes, I gave it to him. I'm like, what do you mean? He goes, I gave it to him. He said, I didn't like my partner. I wasn't enjoying it. And I felt like that was costing me so much money that it was stopping me from being able to be successful on my other venture.
Yeah.
And I said, well, what happened when you did that? He goes, the next year I sold my company for $75 million. And then the next time it was like 250. so, you know, it was worth it. And that's what started me thinking that way. I was like, all right, if it doesn't make me happy, get rid of it. But unfortunately, I had a lot of things that didn't make me happy. So it took years to get rid of all of it. But I did. And here we are. So anyway.
It is, you talk about where you kind of came from, where you're at today, mindset and all that. And I think it really is just kind of growth that unless you've gone through it, you just don't have that perspective. And that's the tough part for a lot of the entrepreneurs that are just at the beginning. You know, they don't have the perspective yet, and they need people that have been through it to help them through and give them that advice and, mentor them through the process. Yeah. That's why we're here on DIY.
I was just saying that the other day to somebody. They're like, what do you talk about in your podcast? I mean, like we talk about business, but it's like, it's about like how business impacts your life and your family and, you know, it can be a very lonely thing, but
it's business experience, it's life experience. It all kind of works together to kind of get you to be successful. And sometimes it takes a lot of, hits on the head to get you there.
Totally. Totally.
Well, when I was younger, I would not network and I wouldn't do, I got invited to YPO and the only networking organization I actually joined was Tiger 21, like 8 years ago. And then now I'm in like five. And I'm starting my own because it's just that to me, that is how business should get done. I mean, I have met amazing people from all over the country. And they're people you can talk about business with because that's what they do. And there's some of them that have a net worth minimum and da, 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 da. Honestly, there's no difference in the people if they're worth $100 million or they're worth $1 million. It's all the same. We're all dealing with the same shit. There's just more zeros. Exactly. I mean, at the end of the day, it's the same. So all the time people in my, I'm an EO too. And people are like, oh, you do these giant deals and all this. And I said, it's just more zeros. It's the same stuff you deal with every day. Like it's the same. There's no difference.
Right.
At all. I just make or lose more money.
Exactly. Hopefully make more than
usually that's the case.
Right. So I was gonna wrap things up here and ask you about your company and you know, mention that a little bit. But before we do that, you mentioned you have two kids. What are you gonna say to them? Like, what's your your quick lesson to them about starting a business, running a business? What would you say to them? Like, what's the big advice for the kids?
This is a conversation. I have a 9-year-old. I have two boys. My oldest is 9, youngest is 6, and he has asked me about starting a business. So this is actually just happened about a month ago, and I'm like, okay. I said, what do you want to do? And he's like, I want a lemonade stand. You know, I'm like, okay. I said, do you know how much lemonade costs? He's like, no, mom gives it to me. I'm like, okay, well, mom can't just give you lemonade forever. Like, that's not really going to be a business that's going to be sustainable, right? Like, you see the problem here. You have to buy the lemonade and then sell it. And then he's like, oh, okay. I said, yeah. And I said, then plus you have to be there to sell the lemonade. And that's the problem for me, is that if you have to be there to sell the lemonade, you're not selling enough lemonade. So, right. Right?
Yep.
So I said, what you need to do is find a business. And I said, like an Amazon store or something. And I talked to him, he's been researching since, but like something that you don't have to be there for, and it just generates cash. Like, that's it. And here's $1,000, and you can either go buy yourself something with it, or you can invest it, and maybe you'll make $100 a month off of it. You know, that's the kind of things that I'm teaching my kids, is to build something that they don't have to run themselves every day, that makes them money, and allows them to have freedom like I have, because I think that's crucial. You know, when I was growing up, everybody just work, and that's all you heard and what you did. And that's, you know, and I want my kids to work hard, don't get me wrong, but I also want them to be healthy and happy and have an amazing life. And that's the balance is probably the biggest thing I'm trying to teach them, which is hard because they don't really grasp it yet. But financially, from a business, it's find something you can automate and stay out of the way and let it make you money. And, you know, put your money into something that will keep sending you more money, not just spend it and be done, because he's done that. We've gone through that exercise.
Good.
I want this. Okay, here you go. One. And I'm like, oh, I want this now. I'm like, well, you spent all your money over here, so you can't get anything else now.
Yep.
Spend it on places that's going to make you more money there. That's what you spend it on.
That's it. Right. Absolutely.
So, let's tell people about your business. Let's, if somebody, and I'm not sure if this is cool, but if somebody wanted to reach out to you and ask you for advice, give you a chat, like, let's talk about that a little bit. How do they reach out to you and give us some links to your business?
Well, my company website is trek1capital.com. Every letters, no numbers, trek1capital. And my email is brandon@trek1capital.com. And that is my business. I mean, we're in the business of helping people scale their businesses, investing in those businesses, and also looking for people who want to buy companies to invest in those businesses with us. You know, that's kind of the whole idea behind what I'm putting together, is something that brings investors and you know, small business owners to the same place, so the people who are investing can understand some of the things that these people in these companies deal with, because a lot of, you know, investors don't understand that, and they want to buy a business and they want to be involved. It's like, okay, well, before you do that, you should probably understand a little bit of how it works. And so that's kind of the idea behind that. And then, you know, those relationships will take on whatever they take on. I don't know what's going to happen with them, but for me, it's just bringing the right people in the right places, different experience from different industries. And I think that's the way you learn in business, the way I learn. I'm not a big book learner. I'm a jump in the middle of it and listen. I try to be the quiet guy in the room if I can be, and just listen to everything that's going on.
Yeah. Very cool. Well, I hope people do reach out to you. I really enjoyed the conversation, and I'm just happy for where you're at in life right now. It sounds like you're in a great space.
Thank you very much. And it's nice. It's evolved, but it's to a place right now that's very nice. So thank you.
Awesome. Well, congratulations. And hey, thank you for listening, subscribing, and reviewing DIY for Business. The subjects that we cover on this podcast are selected with the goal of helping your business grow. All the information provided is opinion-based, and you might want to consult a professional to discuss your exact business situation. Greg and I want your company to succeed, and we're happy to take your questions. We'd also love to hear your suggestions for future episodes. If there's an area of your business where you need some solid business advice or help, let us know, and we can build an entire episode around it and get your questions answered. You can reach out to us by visiting our website at DIYForBusinessPodcast.com. The link's in the podcast description. We thank you again for listening and subscribing to DIY for Business, where you are not alone.